Hey guys, thanks for joining me for this 82nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include Dr. Andrew Orden, plays the host of The Doctors, which airs weekdays with new episodes through May and June. We'll also visit with famed concert promoter Danny Zalisco about his book All Access Occupation, Concert Promoter. We'll also talk about the return to new normal as things open up, and we'll talk about a special signing event going on Thursday. We'll also talk with yoga instructor, life coach, and author Erica Mather, talk about her book, Your Body, Your Best Friend, in the confidence-crushing pursuit of unrealistic beauty standards and embrace your true power. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Now, I guess the idea here is to give your car a vintage look. A high-end auto shop in the UK has started customizing new cars to make sections of them look rusty. Now, they did it with a few panels on a brand new Land Rover, where two sections of the hood are covered in rust plus two vents on the side. So instead of the whole thing, it's more like using rust as an accent color. But for the right price, you could have your entire car rusted up if you really wanted to, and they could even seal it to keep that fresh rust look. Or you can just leave it alone and let the, quote, natural course of corrosion continue. We've got Dr. Andrew Orden on the line with us, and first off, Dr. Orden, always great to visit with you, my friend.
Always great to talk to you, and love your show, and good stuff.
Now, Dr. Orden, as the doctors continue on, new episodes airing now in May, and how much different not only is the process, but also the content as opposed to what you guys have dealt with in years past?
Well, like everybody, this year has been like no other, and we were in studio for a while, then we had to go virtual. We went back to doing more studio work, doing some virtually, but you know, it's been an interesting season, and I must say our producers have done a bang-up job. I'm currently the host. I have great co-hosts on a regular basis. We have sort of a emphasis on mental health. I have two great psychiatrists, Ish Major and Dominic Sportelli, that come on a regular basis. You know, so many mental health issues associated with the pandemic and how it's affected our lives. We try to help you navigate through that. It's been a big part, but we mix it up. We're talking everything in medicine, including plastic surgery and women's health, and we touch on all of it. We do have some great shows coming up in May and June.
Dr. Orden, for you, working in the field of plastic surgery, has the boom of plastic surgery this last year, I mean, why the boom, and have you been surprised by that as well?
Well, I am surprised, and you hit it right on the head. We're seeing a Zoom boom that people see themselves more than ever on the screen, streaming live, looking at themselves, analyzing themselves, and if they see something that they don't like, whether it be bags under their eyes, a double chin, wrinkles, they go, hey, you know what? I want to get rid of that. So it's been good for business. We are busy doing everything from the minimally invasive to, you know, procedures, facelifts, eyelids. People have put on some inches. They want to get rid of that with liposuction. We're doing it all, and people are still at home recovering. They have time. They're already wearing a mask. Maybe they've saved money during the pandemic. So it's been good for business.
You also mentioned the mental health as well. And Dr. Orden, I don't think we can put a high enough emphasis on mental health as we come out of this pandemic and try to come up with whatever that new normal is, right?
Oh, yeah. It is going to be a new normal. It's not back to the old normal that we saw, because there's just been so many changes. We've all been affected by this. Our kids have been affected. Lives have been disrupted. Kids weren't able to go to school. Kids didn't have, you know, normal sporting events and graduations and things. I mean, it's been a difficult time, and those events you know, have long-lasting effects on us, both physically and mentally. So in getting through that, we have to identify those issues, those problems, and find solutions and work our way through it. And that's a big part of what we're doing on the doctors as we come out of the pandemic.
And Dr. Orton, how much pride do you take being able to maybe make a difference in just one person's life each day on a daily occurrence?
Well, that's probably the single biggest thing about being on this show now. 13 seasons, over 2,000 episodes, hitting 144 countries worldwide. I mean, literally millions of people. Never in my wildest dreams that I ever think as a physician that I would touch so many people. And, you know, I travel, I've been around the world, and every day I'm just blown away with the response that I get, people that watch the show, love the show. And what's particularly heartfelt for me is when I meet somebody and say, hey, because of your show, I quit smoking, or I lost 20 pounds, or I'm eating better and feel so much better for it, or I examined my neck and found something on my thyroid as a result of watching the show. So, you know, those moments, that kind of feedback is priceless, and I could have never had that type of experience in a normal practice touching so many people.
Right. And Dr. Orton, with the concerns about the vaccine, obviously, as we head closer to herd immunity, if somebody's got the questions, the concerns about getting the vaccine, what would you say to them?
Well, I would say that it's now millions of people in the United States and probably a billion worldwide that have gotten the vaccine, and it has been effective, safe. Minimal downsides. It has been tested that, you know, people initially were hesitant. And I can relate to that to a certain point. But now, for those people that kind of wanted to watch and wait, hey, that period is well behind us. And we need to hit that 70% mark. And, you know, we need to get the people that have been reluctant. We need to get the kids now. It's been shown that the kids can get vaccinated safely, get them back to school, et cetera, allow them to move on with their lives. So important. We need to hit that 70% mark. I think in most areas we're 50%, maybe a little bit better. We need to hit 70%. Then we're going to be through this pandemic.
That's right. And Dr. Orton, of course, the show Monday through Friday. I also want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything you've got going social media wise as well.
Well, social media wise, you know, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. They're having me do some crazy stuff on TikTok, too. So you can find me, Dr. Andrew Orton. Check it out. And, you know, I'm not a spring chicken, but I got to keep up with the younger guys and have a social media presence as well.
That's right. Well, Dr. Andrew Orton, it is always a pleasure to visit with you, sir. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule and look forward to visiting again real soon.
Likewise. It's a pleasure. You have a great day.
Now, life is hard enough. So when someone puts together a list of amazing life hacks, I tend to pay attention. And here are five that you might not know about. Number one, put onions in the freezer for 10 minutes before you chop them. They're less likely to make you cry that way because it takes longer for the juices to release the chemical gas that makes you tear up. Number two, use a cheese grater for hard butter, especially if you're baking. It softens up a lot faster that way, and you don't have to risk liquefying it in the microwave. Number three, use nail polish remover to get permanent marker off your skin. Now that one might come in handy if you have kids, or I guess if you pass out at a college party as well. Number four, use Windex to get a ring off your finger. Now someone who worked at a jewelry store said it works great, and it's because Windex has compounds called surfactants that lower surface tension. And number five, you can use chips as kindling if you need to start a fire. corn chips, potato chips, and even Doritos work. They're flammable because of all the fat and oil, and they burn slowly, which is also good. Gonna have a chance to not only talk about the book again, but virtual signing, live signing event coming up on Thursday. All excess occupation, easy for me to say, concert pro. We've got Danny Zalisco on the line. And Danny, probably not the best intro you've ever had.
Oh, hell, I've had a lot worse. Hi, Cameron.
Now, Danny, tell us a little bit about the event, the live signing event, how this all came to tame together, and how excited you are as things are trying to get back to whatever that new normal is.
Well, the first part about the live signing is we're doing a virtual signing over the internet at Thursday at 3:30, and Aldi Miola is going to be the moderator for it, and it should be a lot of fun. Other than that, I'm tickled as hell that, things are starting to open up again and people are loosening up, like, not like they needed a lot of help. But I think everybody's starting to see the end of the tunnel here, and hopefully soon we're completely done with this and it's just a bad memory.
Now, Danny, as folks get ready to reopen, how crazy do you think the first shows are going to be? How excited are the fans to just be able to participate again, I should say?
You know, I think they'll be very, very excited. I don't know that it'll require or call for a lot of outward, you know, craziness or you know, like it's New Year's Eve 50 years ago or something. But I think that it's really more of a sense of inner relief and maybe bringing about some peace where you can, you know, do one of the most normal, natural things that we've grown up doing, which is gathering, you know, and assembling together and with people who you don't know to enjoy the same things. And I think that's like one of our biggest, greatest things we can do as humans here on Earth, you know, is acknowledge great art and great music and great times, whether it's with somebody you know and love or not. And so many times at these events, people walk out of there meeting somebody they end up knowing and loving. I mean, the concerts are such a big thing. I mean, it's a certain type of person's way to express who they are in public, and sometimes you catch somebody else's eye and you become friends or more. And I think of how many people you know met at a concert or at a club or something connected to music. And that's why I'm here. I mean, I want to be the world's biggest matchmaker. Without going online, doing it that way.
Now, Danny, let's recount a little bit about the book, All Excess Occupation, Concert Promoter. And for you, Danny, to see those words put down on paper, see some of those images as well. I mean, how much was your heart filled as you saw the final copy?
You know, it's a great question. It was incredible. What a relief! And again, I mean, to me, you know, at this age, relief means more than almost anything else. And when I tell you it was a relief to see them down as a collection, and somebody handing me that first copy of the book, it was such a great moment for me. When you intimately know something as closely as you do when you're doing something like this, it doesn't ever seem like it's going to be done. It's like the album that keeps getting mixed over and over and over again because you just don't want to leave anybody out or anything out or any great story. And then you get to the point where it's like, there's plenty of great stuff in here. I mean, and nobody's going to know what I left out anyway, right? So, you know, I think that I tried not to leave anything great out, and I think that's what shows in the book.
Now, Danny, as things open back up again, does the life of a concert promoter get easier now that folks are dying to get out to shows, or does it make it even that much more tricky?
Well, the concert promoter's life, mine anyway, is never easy, and it's also, after all these years, it's not that tricky. it's a matter of still following one foot after another with regards to trying to anticipate, you know, what the buildings need, what your staff needs, what the audience needs, what the artist needs. And I think the overriding, you know, thing for me is it just be done in a calm and smooth way, and we get back to doing what we've done so many times. We can literally do it in our sleep and have done it in our sleep before. But this isn't hard. This should be easy. It should be fun. You know, it's a matter of finding the right dates that fit for the bands, just like always. Only in many cases, they've already had to move so many tours and so many plans. You know, at least, I mean, this is where the relief part comes, where it's like, you mean I don't have to book that hotel and that flight and that bus? I don't have to ask the crew to wait another couple months? You know, I mean, all those different things that, you know, we have to constantly deal with, because for the last 14 months or so, all we've been wanting to do is complete the jobs that we started with various shows, you know, that we've had. And those shows are still living and breathing just like they're booked for the first time, because they haven't actually played out yet. And once they do, you know, then, you know, in the meantime, we're booking new shows in anticipation of everything returning back to the way it was. It sounds so weird, doesn't it? You know, the way it was. I mean, I feel like Barbara Streisand on a break in the song.
Now, Danny, as our world goes through ever evolutions and changes, and when we go through hard times, it seems like you see a shift in the music. And how do you see the music coming out of pandemic?
How do I see the music? Well, you know, I think what you're going to find is these bands and these singers have probably been practicing and doing and writing and doing everything that they do a lot more than usual. I know a lot of my musician friends got to know their families for the first time. I mean, because these people, I mean, they're gypsies. They're on the road all the time. Not 100%, but a lot of them are out there more than half of the year. So I think for everybody, I think the wives are going to be happy that the husbands are going back to work and they're getting out of their hair. And I think the husbands that got singers for wives are going to be happy that they're going to be out there, because ultimately, I mean, it drives performers nuts when they can't perform. I mean, it's something that they do. It's what drives them. It's what makes them, you know, do all the great songs that they do. It comes from that special place of knowing that they're going to get to sing it in front of an audience one day, and it inspires them and it draws them. And without that inspiration, you know, they can draw from within, and that's what they've been doing for a while. Now they're going to get back out there. I think it's going to be great. You should get more new great music than ever before.
That's right. And again, the book, All Excess Occupation, Concert Promoter. Danny, I always want to make sure and let folks know not only where to find the book, the upcoming signing event, and all the stuff you got going social media-wise as well.
My website is dzplive.com, and that's where you can find out anything you want about the book. And then we're doing the live signing event at 3:30 on Thursday, and all the information is there on my website as well about how to join in on that. Al Di Meola is going to be the moderator of the hour, and people call in, they have questions, or they want to say something to me or Al, they can do that, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, Danny, it's always great to visit with you. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule today, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
I can't wait. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Now, a lot of snack foods are fine on their own, but you can name one that's a whole lot better when paired with another one, can't you? Well, someone asked people to name the top snacks that are better as a team than they are on their own. And get ready to hear the word chocolate a lot. And here are the top 10. Number 1, cookies and cream. Number 2, chocolate and nuts. Number 3, popcorn and chocolate. Number 4, chocolate and marshmallow. Number 5, chocolate and fruit. Number 6, peanut butter and jelly. Number 7, peanut butter and apples. Number 8, cheese and crackers. Number 9, chips and salsa. And number 10, chocolate and peanut butter. Our next guest on the podcast is got a new book to talk about, a newish book, I should say, Your Body, Your Best Friend, In the Confidence-Crushing Pursuit of Unrealistic Beauty Standards and Embrace Your True Power. And I got it all out without a big flub. We've got Erica Mather with us today. And first off, Erica, I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule.
Oh, Cameron, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. I appreciate it.
Now, Erica, tell us, first off, this is a book of a journey is the way I see it for you. And where did that journey begin? I mean, was this the ideal ending, if you will, as you were coming out of high school and that idea?
Oh, gosh, no, I had no plan of any of this coming out of high school. Not at all. No, you must talk to very, very like forward thinking high schoolers. I mean, I came out of high school and was like, oh, boy, or rather, oh, no. Now what? It was more kind of that. So, no, I came out of high school and actually I entered into the University of Wisconsin Madison Conservatory. So I was weirdly like straddling the athletics world and the music world. I also pulled an oar in a boat. I rowed in college. And so, no, I had no conception of where I would be now, which I think is the best kind of journey, right?
Right. So exactly.
You just like look back and you're like, wow, that's amazing. How did that all happen? No, when I came out of college, when I came out of high school, I think I was confused and didn't like myself very much and was trying to kind of like disengage myself from parental control, you know, things like that. And college was just sort of a big to do, you know. I attended a University of Wisconsin in Madison, which is a very esteemed research university. So, and went into the conservatory, which is, you know, epically not a strategic move by any stretch of the imagination, but I was just building on the things that I already knew that I loved, like playing music and being active in my body. And that was pretty much it. So, no, the book endpoint, very far out of my foresight. But I will say, now that I think about it, I was going through some files and came across, you know, little fiction writing things that I did like as a kid, like probably as like 6 or 7, that I was writing little stories. So to write a kind of like self-help book, because al final, my book is a self-help book, was not really the idea. It was more to write fiction. And it has entered my mind recently to write a work of fiction. So, you know, here's the summary, the long summary, which is, I think that your soul knows where it's going. And whether you know where your soul is going or not is a whole nother matter, but the soul knows where it's going. So I could answer the question by saying, yes, of course, my soul knew where it was going. I just didn't know, but here we are.
Now, Erica, you've had the opportunity through yoga, and I want to talk how your music background blended with yoga and the transformation that occurred as well.
Yeah, so my music background and my yoga transformation. So I think the through line is creativity, because yoga is a creative endeavor, and certainly like teaching yoga is a creative endeavor. And I approached it as such when I started teaching, but also as a practitioner, it's something that I'm always trying to teach my students, is to be curious. And curiosity is really the energy, I think, that sparks creativity, right? So it could be curiosity, like, well, if I put this here and that there, then what happens? Curiosity kind of combined with, I think, life force energy, like a will to live, or a will to like be like, I made this. So they went together, but the through line was creativity and curiosity, and then also what it means to be alive. I hope I'm not being too esoteric. what it means to be alive, because I think creativity is a little bit about the expression of what it is to be alive. And I was a composer and a jazz musician, so the things that I did were very creative at its core. Like, I wrote music and then I created music spontaneously. And that is very much the way I approach teaching yoga and experiencing yoga, is like, yoga is an exploration of what does it mean to be alive, and how do you do so in a way that is in harmony with your soul. We could call it your soul and the world. And so those two things are very strong there, but I think actually I'm more well-suited to teaching yoga in a way, because I always was trying to teach these life lessons when I was teaching music. But I think the life lessons, I was interested also in exploring the life lessons, but the life lessons are more suited to be discovered and then taught in a yogic context. And I think these tie in very strongly to the book, Your Body, Your Best Friend, because also anything you do in your body, whether you play music or conduct a podcast interview, you're doing it in a body. So you got to sort of come to terms with that. But they also, my approach to spirituality is very much embodiment focused. So it's like, how are you going to find out what you're here for? Well, let's ally your body in that question. So it's not just a matter of your intellect or your soul or your spirit or however you want to describe it. And so the life lessons, I think, unfurl much more easily when you're using the right method or the right tool to answer the question. You're nodding. Yes, thank you. Thank you. So I know I'm not saying things that sound totally crazy.
Now, how have you seen people's mentalities change over these last 15 months in your dealings and in your handlings with folks? How much has the mental game been affected, if you will?
Oh, a lot. I mean, so for your listeners, just to kind of land it, like, I live in New York City and I teach yoga, but I teach yoga around the world, really, because the COVID, the pandemic has opened up. I was already teaching all around the world, but my main people I'm working with are like my private clientele here in New York City. And I would say that there's suffering all around, and the suffering for the people who were already like have the tools to deal with what was happening, they suffered differently than the people who didn't already have the tools to handle what was happening. And so there's suffering all over. But I've been fortunate enough to work with people who already had tools in place to kind of handle the crisis of existence, the crisis of mortality, the crisis of financial stability, which I think we all confronted together, but some of us had tools in place and some of us didn't. And so the kind of people I've been engaged with mostly were the people who had the tools in place. And so whether you were had them or didn't have them, what I'm observing is that people have suffered a lot. And the people who have the tools in place either used them or they didn't. And the tools being kind of like yoga, meditation, but mostly it's like, yoga and meditation are tools that allow you to have like better perspective on yourself and the things that are happening to you, right? And to not take it so personally, which can be hard. So what I saw was either they used them or they didn't. Some people doubled down, like really were like, oh, I need more of this in order to get through. Certainly I felt it myself. I was like, I'm a yoga teacher. And I was like, I'm drowning, man.
Right.
Right. So I was like, okay, I need to level up. Like I need to increase whatever I'm doing in order to not drown. So, and specifically with people's relationships with their bodies, it aroused a lot of mortality fear, right? Because the threat was to your life.
Right.
There's a lot of mortality fear. Some people, they had other illnesses surface, sort of latent illnesses surface. Certainly I know that my TMJ, which means temporomandibular joint disorder, like surfaced with a vengeance.
Wow.
Some people got better. Some people's like things went away because they finally had a chance to rest, even though it was forced rest. Some people had new things manifest, I think maybe because they had the time or the space for it to manifest. Some people gained a lot of weight. Some people lost a lot of weight. Some people learned new physical skills. Some people resurrected skills they had but hadn't explored in a while.
Right.
So it's been a lot, but I can say the through line is everybody has suffered to some degree.
And for you to share that even you have had the difficulties in the last year, I mean, do you think that that helps others as well to see that, you know, hey, we all still have the struggles. We all still have the battles. We still have to fight each day.
Absolutely. I mean, the journey of a teacher is to be ahead of their students. That's really it. You kind of want to be out front a little bit so that you have wisdom and skills to offer up, but it doesn't mean that you don't suffer or that you don't have problems. And certainly I think that sometimes the more that you teach, or I know as a yoga teacher, the more that I teach, sometimes it surfaces problems of greater dimension. Because it's like the more skillful you get, the more you're up to the challenge.
Right. Right.
So no. What I mean by no is no, teachers never don't have problems. Teachers always have problems. And it's just hopefully we're handling them skillfully and gracefully and can create wisdom that then we can impart to our students that will be helpful and alleviate their suffering and shorten their path or help them find their own.
The name of the book, Your Body, Your Best Friend, as well. And as folks are coming out of pandemic and like you mentioned, some have gained a lot, some have lost a lot, becoming one with your body. If folks haven't done that before, I mean, how important is that right now as we make a fresh new start again?
Well, I think that it's critically important because this is the cornerstone to my philosophy and hence the title of the book, Your Body, Your Best Friend. My observation is that people's body image challenges are always present and they never go away. And these especially don't go away if you ignore them.
Right.
But they're also very slippery. Like it's hard to pin down to say something more, more descriptive than I overeat and under-exercise, right? Because my sense is that those behaviors are actually symptoms of something deeper, like a mindset or a belief. And so how important is it now as you come out? I mean, it's always important. And I think I can't really say that it's more important than it was before, but maybe it is because I think the world is in crisis and the world is also in opportunity. Right? Whenever there's a crisis, there's also an opportunity. And the opportunity is for you to have a clean slate, make a fresh start. You've had some, hopefully everybody has sort of had some crystallization around what's important to them and what's not important to them. And regardless of what's important to you or not important to you, if you intend to live your life, which hopefully you do, your primary companion through this whole thing will be your body. And how you handle some very concrete things like injury, illness, aging, death, the specter of death, other people's deaths. These are really like the tangible domains in which we can analyze our own relationship with our body. How do you handle yourself when you're ill, which a lot of us had an opportunity to, right? Well, many of us were sick. I was sick, right? So how do you handle yourself when you're ill? If you're injured, right? How do you handle yourself when you're injured? And some people overexercised and got injured. Some people laid around on their couch a lot and got injured. You can get injured lying on your couch. It's real, right? So how do you handle yourself? And these these instances are paradigms for you to examine the energy of how do you relate to your body. So let's just take illness, for instance. Like, I think that there was a tremendous recalibration in our collective psyche around how you should behave when you're ill. For instance, don't go to work. Don't go spend time with other people, right? And prior to this pandemic, right, how many of us, raise your hand if you would go to work sick? My hand is up. Yeah, we'd all go to work sick, which was actually not only not wise, but is also like not helpful to your body. But the reason you went to work sick was because the machinery of your financial life needed to keep moving regardless of your health. Okay, so now we've had a little shift where now the machinery of your working life is not more important than your health and the health of others. This is a huge paradigm shift for us collectively, right? And this is going to reshape how we relate to our bodies, which is also how we relate to our health, right? And hopefully will reshape how we create structures that allow people to take care of themselves when they are sick, right? Hopefully structures where people don't feel like they must go to work, even if they're sick, which is inhumane. It's inhumane, right? So these little things that are part of our daily life have tremendous implications in how we relate to our health and how we relate to our bodies, because our bodies are sort of at the foundation of at least our physical health. Well, I shouldn't say at least. Our bodies at the foundation of all of our health in some way, shape, or form. I think I answered the question. Did I?
Yeah, you did completely.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Now, what have you seen over the last 14, 15 months that you have taken in personally? Are there any changes that you've made as a result of pandemic in say your day-to-day life?
Yeah, I'm prioritizing joy. I live in New York City. New York City is a beast, and it is many of the things that it's known for, right? It is a capitalist machine, right? So to live here means you work. Unless you're independently wealthy or, you know, but you work, and you work hard, because the scale of financial burden to be here is robust. So I moved to New York City many years ago because I had a thing I wanted to do. I had a person I wanted to be, you know, and this is the place you come to be anything, to do anything. Right. And it is true. It is real. You can come here and do anything and be anything. But now 16 years later, a little older, a little wiser, a little more money in my pocket, it's like, am I living to work? That's tricky because I'm an entrepreneur.
Right.
I'm an entrepreneur and I'm an author. And so the book itself is a product of my work life, right? And so I think the question is not more, do I live to work, but do I live to be of service? And I think that life is in many ways about how can we be of service to one another. So reframing service from work and just looking at where that is. And then life is also to be enjoyed. And when your work starts to overtake it in a way that curtails your joy, which is a path, can be a path of an mm-hmm. entrepreneur, right? Is all of a sudden there's only work and no joy, right? When it started out that your joy was your work, and suddenly it's morphed into this monster, right? So really what I realized is, al final, when I'm going to die, I want to know that my relationships were lived to their most robust capacity, and that I did my best to love all the people around me as well as I can. And, you know, and that is in part of my work life, because I'm a yoga teacher and a teacher. So part of what I'm doing is loving my students as best I can. And, but that's still work. And so, you know, to look differently and look to my friends and my family and my other relationships and just be like, we're solid. So it's prioritized joy and love.
That's good. Now, how does, and this is another question I like to ask folks, especially entrepreneur types, how has goal setting changed for 2021, 2022, and moving forward for you?
Goal setting is a lot more short term. So I think where we were having like a shared collective experience and you kind of felt like you could rely on certain things in the world to be true and real, we are existing in a shifting fabric. So my goal setting is mostly about today and maybe like next week. And that's it. Wow. So, you know, I'm like, I'm good today. What can we do to keep that going in that direction? Like today's looking like we're going up. Let's keep going up. Right. And that's pretty much it. Like I gotta say, it's like, what am I doing today? How is today going to be great? And when you think about it, isn't that what we always had all along anyway and thought we had more?
Yeah.
So it's been a great like melting of delusion. Who knows what 2022 is going to be like? No idea. I just hope that 2022 is better than 2021. That's my hope. And so every day I'm like, no clue, but let me respond to what's happening now. That's it.
That's good stuff. Now, I want to make sure, Erica, and let folks know where to find more information, not only about the book, but everything else you've got to offer as well.
Thanks. Well, the best place to go is to my website, www.ericamather.com. One of my friends gets on the phone and says, hey, www.ericamather.com. He's funny. ericamather.com. And it's ericamather. .com. Unfortunately, I'm not related to Marshall Mathers as in any way, shape that or that I know. So that's the best place. You can poke around my website and see what sorts of trainings I'm doing and sort of online teaching. I do have online trainings around body image. I have one coming up pretty recently or pretty soon. Actually, it's called the Adore Your Body 6-week summer session, where I teach my 5 adoring core competencies, which are tangible, concrete areas in which you can measure your relationship with your life and assess improvement in ways that are tangible and concrete. but I'm also mostly on Instagram. If you're interested in a social media setting to follow me, I do have a presence on Facebook, but I'm really barely there. So Instagram is where you can find me, but my website. And I'd really say hop on my website and sign up on my mailing list, because I cannot foresee the future. And I don't know if I will divest myself completely of social media, or as we're now going to call it, anti-social media in the future. And I'd like to stay in contact with people in ways that I have closer control over. And that's my mailing list.
Understand. Well, Erica, it has been great to have the time to visit with you a little bit today. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and looking forward to checking out the website a little deeper.
Thank you, Cameron. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And everybody who's listening, have a beautiful day, and thanks for listening.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 82nd episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, visit the merch store. We've got hoodies, shirts, mugs, tumblers, stickers, and more. That's gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Well, thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your Monday.